Today's show is sponsored by Fender Guitars. Fender Guitars, shred one today. Fender Guitars, physics in action. Summon waveforms in the air like a wizard of old. This is what happens when I have too much coffee. Who shall wield the axe of fury and shredding? On my show today is Mr. Benjamin Gibbard. Ben Gibbard. Ben plays in a band called Death Cab for Cutie. I don't know why you wouldn't know that already, but just in case, he does. The first time we played adjacent to Death Cab for Cutie was at the Fireside Bowl, October 15th of 2000. I think Death Cab was opening up for Pedro the Lion at the early show at Fireside Bowl, and we were playing the late show with, Jebediah for sure was on it, but then it might have been Get Up Kids or any number of a dozen bands we used to play out with. I'm a little hazy there. You're lucky I remembered that much of it. We talk a little bit about overthinking lyrics, one of my favorite pastimes, and it's nice to hear someone's perspective who is reassuring that you don't have to be an emotional wreck to find your creative voice. It's okay. It really is. My conversation with Ben Gibbard happened May 18th of 2020, which feels like 15 years ago. Yeah, so you found a rhythm? We've gotten into like a groove now, like
yeah,
already?
Yeah, I feel like the first month of this, I was like, you knew it was going to be a while, but you didn't really know how long this was going to be. So I think initially like a lot of people I've talked to had this idea that I was just going to throw myself into work and immediately write an album and a musical and a book and, you know, just do it all, you know? And for the first month or so, there was just this kind of crippling malaise that just kind of took over me. You know, this sense of dread around the world and everything else. And I would reach out to friends of mine, like other writers or musicians or poets, or whatever, and be like, "You guys getting anything done?" They're like, "Not a damn thing." So, like, it felt like, but now it's been a couple of months, I feel like I'm starting to, you know, as I said, I'm at a place of acceptance with all this. So I'm starting to just recognize that my life is getting out for some exercise, working on music and watching movies. And it's actually been kind of nice. I'm settling into it in a way that is productive, but also I fully recognize how lucky I am to be able to and not have to concern myself with a lot of the things that the majority of Americans and people around the world have to concern themselves with. So I'm very aware of that and feel it's always worth stipulating.
Still some days you're just up against the wall and the wall's winning.
Right. Yeah. I have my good and bad days. I think like everybody, you know, some days you're like, I guess I'm on the couch all day today.
I sort of need a rigorous schedule of like, okay, I'm going to do this during this time. I'm going to do this during this time. I'm going to practice guitar. I'm going to journal. I'm going to do like writing exercises for 10 minutes. I start out like with a lot of energy and I say, okay, here's exactly what I'm going to do. 10 minutes of this, 10 minutes of this, 10 minutes of this, then an hour and a half of this, then break. Then like I basically make a whole day's worth of schedule and I'll stick to that until I get like the first idea, and then I'll abandon the schedule and just consume myself with the idea, because I'll justify that by like, well, isn't it all about getting an idea? So I have an idea. It's all about that. But then the idea sort of suffers because I don't have this balance anymore.
Right.
You know, I don't have this whole life kind of the whole life sort of betterment kind of plan in place.
Yeah, I used to have a very regimented approach to this stuff, and I would attempt to. I had a studio in an office building downtown, like a small just writing studio, and I would. It was about 20-minute commute, and I would tell myself I had to be there between 10 or 10:30, otherwise my day was going to be shot. Try to, you know, kind of inject some structure. And at some point, my wife was like, why does it matter? Like, it doesn't matter when you get there. I was like, no, you don't understand. It really does. And then I came to the conclusion that it really does not matter. And I've kind of shifted my working, my schedule, where I'm just kind of trying to get 3 or 4 hours in the afternoon just with an instrument or with a pen in my hand. And sometimes you sit and you goof around and nothing comes of it. And then sometimes you get something. And really, I've also come to this conclusion that the pressure is completely off. We have no deadlines anymore. There are no, you know, we're looking to maybe be in the studio in January, but there are so many hurdles that need to be jumped before we can even get to having that be a real plan. That I'm not feeling this like pressure to kind of be working and writing all the time. And then as soon as I take that pressure off myself, then the songs start coming. And I always feel like I do my best work when I'm just letting my mind wander and I'm not trying to stick to some kind of hard schedule, even though that's totally within my nature to want to do that.
You can't see the you can't see the planetary object in the sky if you're looking directly at it. It has to be just like you can only catch it at the peripheral part because it's so faint.
Yeah.
You know, like, let that in, like, through the side hatch.
Yeah, exactly.
It's usually like a mistake. Like, a lot of songs get started for me because I heard somebody say something, and they, whether it's accurate that's what they said or not, doesn't really matter, because in my head I've turned it into like, wait, did you just say, you know, that's pretty cool, and then I'll write that down.
Yeah, and I don't really like, I don't keep a lot of notes or journals or anything like that. I just kind of, every once in a while, I'll just kind of think up some like a line or something like that, just kind of put it in my phone or something like that. But I usually just kind of chase whatever the first idea ends up on the paper, you know. It's like whatever the first, kind of like first thought, best thought, and it's kind of like I'm just one line will kind of get me to the next one. And yeah, I don't know. I find songwriting to be this just really, really kind of delightful experiment and just getting lucky, you know? I mean, it's just not even, it's like I almost feel like most of the songs that I've written that tend to be the best ones, they seem to be beamed down from somewhere else. It's as if I don't really have any, like, I don't have any ownership over them. They just kind of seem to come from somewhere else. And then for all,
right.
if it's a month of writing where I've gotten nothing serviceable, it always seems like at the last minute something just kind of seems to get beamed down from somewhere else. So I don't know. It's like like a good friend of mine once kind of referred to being a songwriter as being kind of like an alchemist. Like, there's nothing there, and then there's something there. It's like, you know, like songs kind of define, or being a writer of any kind of discipline, it kind of like defies the laws of physics. Like, there's nothing there, and then there's something there.
There's that point of being really present and responding, but more importantly is just completely letting go and becoming the vessel for the idea, and trying to stay out of your own way and just let the idea kind of happen. Cause you can always put on the editing hat later and nudge it toward like a, you know, a refined kind of place that you think is interesting. An idea is either going to happen in 24 hours or it's going to happen in 5 years for me.
Yeah. You know, like, you'd hear these stories about like Leonard Cohen or something like that, who's on this other, obviously another echelon, like another planet. But that he would just refine and refine and refine and take years to write one song. And I was always kind of intrigued by that idea. However, it's never worked like that for me. The longer I work on something, like, the shittier it gets. Like, I feel there's like a, for me, there's always like a, there's an initial spark, and then there's a period of editing, and there's maybe a second edit, and then that's the thing. Like, after two edits, you might as well just write something new, because it's not, for me at least, it's not going to get better by continuing to pick at it. Normally, just the first idea tends to be the least kind of corrupted idea.
Right.
The most pure, I guess. And then the longer I kind of pick at it, the further it gets away from the spark that made me excited about it in the first place.
So you'll cut yourself off after a certain point. Are you able to do that? Like say, okay, wait, obviously this isn't really working right now. I need a new first idea. Or like how long will you stay with something? If you don't want to refine it too much and you feel like you're going to kill it, how long do you stick with something before the negative returns become apparent and you need to switch to a new first idea?
Well, I mean, you know, let's say if we're going to go into like make a record, it's most likely that, you know, let's say we're working on a song that I wrote like a year before the record, we're going in to make the record, right? So I had all the lyrics and stuff for that initial version that I got excited about. And then there's probably like a little bit of an edit that happens, or, you know, when we're kind of trying to arrange it as a band, or we're kind of doing some pre-production. And then you know, in the studio, I might tweak a word or two here or there. But really at that point, my feeling has always been, there's a reason we're excited about this song. And there's a reason that the lyric is speaking to people. And most of the stuff that I hear and that I'm going to get obsessed about are not things that anybody else is going to care about. You know, so the longer I sit there and try to, the longer I sit kind of fiddling with the lyrics, I just never feel like it ever gets better. I think it just kind of, it can only get kind of convoluted and overthought. And I think that, you know, when you think about it, I'm sure when you bring songs to your band, it's probably the same way. It's like they get excited about certain songs because of the form they're in when you bring them to them. And I always feel it's important to try to preserve that spirit and the kind of the sentiment of the song or the core of it without overthinking it, because no one's going to care that you changed those three lines. It's not going to make it, at least in my case, it's not going to make it world better. It's not going to make it a Gibbard song into a Cohen song. It's not going to do that. You know, it's still going to be a Ben Gibbard song, and you either like those or you don't. So
no one really comes at me with like lyric issues in our working process. There might be the occasional, like we might have a producer that's like they just kind of want a clarification or refinement, or they want to know what's behind it because it seems weird to them or it catches them in some way. But for the most part, everyone sort of defers to like what I want to say with lyrics. I mean, lyrics are the toughest part of this whole thing. The music, like refining the music, directing the mood and the different ways you can embellish that or build that or make it or scrap it and change it and throw it sideways.
Yeah.
Those are just endless. Like, and I could do that all day. That's no problem. That's the fun part of solving the puzzle. But like the lyrics are the thing that like make it, it's not a song until you have like lyrics finished for it.
Well, I don't know if this happens to you as well, but I find that there are often times where someone has contributed, and somebody in the band has contributed like a cool signature part, and then that becomes that song, whether it's the lyric is good or the melody is good, kind of gets bumped up on the list sort of because they're, you know, because they've made this contribution, which certainly makes the music really cool, or in their mind makes it like, oh man, this song has this cool drum part or bass line or whatever.
Right.
But without,
it got away with no crash cymbals. There's no crash cymbals on this song. Finally.
But without a story, without like a lyric that, you know, feels connective. You can make the music sound as cool as you want. But for me, it's always just about coming back to like, trying to create like a song lyrically that people can kind of see in their mind, you know, and that, more importantly, like I can see in my mind's eye, like I'm watching a movie so that I can kind of perform it for other people. And I mean, in our band, our bass player tends to be like my lyric cop, you know, like if there's a line or a verse, he's like, you know what? I think that one could be stronger. I think you could probably maybe swap the first and second or build off this idea. This is really the core of the song. He's always been so good at that. And we've never, we've only worked with two producers, with Chris, our old bandmate on the first chunk of records, and then with Rich Costi for the last two. And Rich never really gave any lyric notes. So, it's more times than not, I kind of say exactly what I want to say, but I always appreciate if something's not clear or if a line is just straight up bad and I think it's witty and it's not, I'd rather have somebody tell me that than dig my toes in about something and then have it turn out to be like the worst line on the record.
Why didn't you tell me this thing sucked? Why'd you let me sing this? Yeah, we did some mixing with Rich Costi. He's pretty cool, man. I like him. I'd love to see what he like, what it's like to have that person around like all day, and be like a part of the day to day sort of team. There really is something like we've made records like remotely from a producer, and then we've made records where people are around all the time. We've made records on our own, but I think there's really something about when people are involved in the small decisions. Every choice you make, the next choice you make is a response to the thing you just heard.
Yeah.
And totally. if your creative input isn't there, in those small, like minor things, then it's like your creative footprint on the project itself is going to be lighter.
Yeah. And totally. Rich has a fairly hands-off approach as a producer, in the sense that he would never say like, I'm hearing this song is like a waltz with strings and we'll bring in this brass band. He didn't tend to ever have an approach that was, he didn't come in with any preordained ideas about what the songs were going to be. He just kind of wanted us to play them and let us find it ourselves. And then,
yeah.
And then we would then kind of build from there. So, I'm really proud of the work we did with him, but there were times where we were really in the weeds with something where I just wanted somebody to tell me what to do. Like, tell me what to do, you know? And he might at times give a directive, and then that would kind of spark an idea or something like that. I love Rich to death, and he's become a really good friend, and he just does really great work.
Everybody comes from a different perspective, and every producer is, you learn something from them. And I remember once, like, I thought that I was really stuck on something, and I thought, I go back and I think like, okay, what would Gil Norton do right here? Or I go back and think like, what would Trombino do right here? Sometimes I take the every producer I've ever worked with and think about them as a singular entity and adopt that voice and then tell myself what to do.
Right.
until I become self-aware that that's what I'm doing and how insane I'm being. And then I have to like just go for a walk or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a good approach to that. I mean, that's not a bad idea. We need to work with some more producers so I can create that like GoBot.
Like I want to be told what to do so often. Like, on one hand, I want to do it so badly because I want to do it, but then I just want to be told what to do.
Right. Well, at a certain point, it's good to have a new set of ears on stuff.
Yeah. I mean, we would never get anything done. We would just like obsess. And then we would turn something in and then, well, we'd probably never turn it in. We'd probably just keep tweaking it if somebody else wasn't around to say, okay, you've done enough. It's good. We can move on. We need to go to mixing, guys.
So I see you must be in, are you in your home studio right now? Is that where I'm seeing where you are? Or are you at a undisclosed location?
Yeah, I'm in our band studio at the moment. This is home base.
Okay.
So I spend most of my time for the last, God, I don't even, like, we've been here maybe 16 years.
Oh, wow. Holy
17,
shit.
17 okay. years?
When we first started working with labels, we basically knew that this wasn't going to be, we thought of it all as like, this is not going to be forever. So let's get some recording equipment so we can work on our own, regardless if there's a label or not. you know, let's get a van.
Yeah, right.
Because then we can tour whether we have tour support or not. And, you know, that's just kind of how we rolled. And slowly over time, we've just sort of built up enough gear that we've been making records here.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, we didn't make that smart decision. We should have bought a building in Seattle like 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's pretty rad. I mean, we're super lucky. Like I said before, we're super lucky.
And how are the rest of your bandmates doing right now? How are they coping with the weight of the world right now?
I think everybody's doing pretty good. You know, I haven't seen Rick or Tom, our bass player, another guitar player. They're sort of in hiding. I think Rick is up. It's also starting to get really hot here. So Rick is up in the northern part of Arizona, trying to cool off because he can. And our drummer is still around. Zach, he's still around in town, just kind of making drum loops.
Yeah, that's what drummers do. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Yeah, he's kind of got a lot of electronic gear going at his house. Part of that is because of like just the need to have something not acoustic that makes a lot of noise. And part of it is because he's into that. I think whatever we do next might be, I have a feeling it's definitely going to be leaning into some of the things that are happening now, like. Because he's at home working like on electronic stuff, maybe that ends up being more of what we do next.
Yeah, Jason, our drummer, he's got a little studio in his house up in Bellingham. So we've actually been doing this kind of remote songwriting kind of experiments where, I mean, normally I just write the songs and then bring them to the band for the most part. But I think since everybody's at home and, you know, people don't have a lot of distractions, we're kind of doing this project where I'll have Dave write a piece of music and then send it to Zach, who then sends it to Nick, who sends it to me, who sends it to Jason. And then, so at the end of the week, so over 5 days, we end up with a piece of music. And I'm trying to kind of orchestrate this somewhat out of order. So I'm not sending them a song and then everybody's just putting their stuff on it. We might start from a different, you know, start with Zach doing some keyboard stuff and then add bass and then add vocals and then add drums. And it's actually been really kind of illuminating. We've done a couple of them so far, and it's been really kind of fun for me to not be always the starting point on a song. Because I have my box of tools that I'm constantly using. And I'm sure like the guys are all getting tired of getting demos with like, you know, like drum loops off of old records or like just like 808s and, you know, two right. guitars and like the same keyboard sounds. So I think it's giving everybody kind of a different palette to kind of play with, which has been kind of cool. And it feels like we're doing something. We're like work, even though we can't get in a room and play music together, it feels like we are literally collaborating. Yeah. And the rule is that no one can hear the thing until it's done. So, you know, last week Dave sent me a piece of music. I put some stuff on it, and by the time I heard it on Friday, it was completely different from the thing that I had put vocals on. So, it's been fun to kind of do these like blind songwriting excursions that I've never done before. We've definitely never done the band, and you know, we'll see kind of at the end of the day what comes out of it, if there's anything usable, but. If anything, it gives everybody an opportunity to kind of just react rather than, you know, it gives me an opportunity to react. It gives everybody a chance to react to whatever's in front of them rather than being in a room with all the instruments and everybody's playing at the same time.
Stuff like that, that sounds really exciting. When you have things to respond to, then you're just kind of wandering around in the environment. Wherever you look, you're going to find yourself. So how can I best take the pressure off, like letting myself look?
Yeah, I'll often find myself hearing something that I really like, and you know, at a certain point, like trying to kind of emulate it, you end up making it so much of your own that it doesn't sound anything like the thing that you were trying to steal. at least that's the idea. But I also really like writing to drum breaks for that same reason. Like I have folders upon folders of old drum breaks, and they're just really fun to write to because, you know, the context in which this drum break was recorded was in the middle of another song. It existed to serve a different purpose. And I just really get a kick out of repurposing that stuff. It's just a lot of fun. It's really enjoyable for me.
Do you use like Logic or Pro Tools or?
Yeah, I use Pro Tools. Yeah.
Pro Tools. The whole thing, like where you have it on loop playback and then end up on a bar section or like a quarter, like a half bar section. And it's like, dun, 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 dun. It's like, oh, that's a, hey, new song idea, guys. Here's this completely, I want to do that. Like just kind of randomly pick, half notes within a song and set it on loop until I find something that's like, okay, now this is like the start of like a two bar progression.
Yeah. I'm fascinated with people who can write from, years ago I did this writing session with Rivers Cuomo, and it was like, we met a couple times. I didn't really know him super well, but I go in there and he plays me like some songs that were going to be on whatever that record was, ended up being, because it was maybe 10 years ago. And then he's like, well, I want to play you some snippets of some things I'm working on. I'm like, okay, great. And I'm expecting to hear like maybe some like singing and like a guitar, or, you know, something that resembles a song. And then he proceeded to scroll through literally 5-second snippets of like chords on the left hand of a piano and then the right hand playing a melody. So it'd be like dunk, 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 ding, da, dun, dee, dunk, 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 dun, da, dun. Okay, that's one. The next one goes dun, 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 dun. Okay, that's another one. And then this one goes, and he had hundreds of these things. And it was just so, and I just remember sitting there like, how is this going to work? And we actually like, we wrote something that I think it came out somewhere kind of obscure, but it worked. I mean, it was such a strange jumping off point to like have a, you know, to be starting a song from like just piano chords in one hand and like melody on the other. And it worked. I mean, it's clearly, I mean, he uses some of like some methodology that's completely anathema to how I work, but it was just fascinating to see how that dude did it, you know?
Yeah. That song Exploder where he's talking about, Summer Elaine and Drunk Dory, I think is the song. And he's talking about like how he just catalogs all kinds of lyrics with different, rhyme schemes and different accents. So he goes back and says, okay, I need something that's a 5-syllable thing with like a 1 and 2 and 3 and, you know, like kind of accent scheme.
Yeah, totally.
And just pieces it together there. Like, I mean, that's a dude who has his method, has his thing down. I mean, I envy him for having that.
Yeah. And I mean, it's whatever works, man, whatever works. It's like, it's just fascinating, especially for somebody who I know so much of their music, to realize that probably some of it came from this methodology. It's pretty bizarre.
Like, do you have like a lot of scraps like that laying around, or is it pretty much just?
I mean, I've got tons of songs, but I don't have. It's not as if I have enough songs to make, you know, like a killer record every 6 months. You know, it's like, to me, I find the value is in finishing things, even if they're not. Even as you're writing it, you realize you're not going to use it, because there tends to be a lyric idea or a guitar thing or like little bits and pieces that might spark something later. And so many times I've had a piece of music or a lyric that was kind of buried in some other song from, you know, demo sessions that just didn't think at the time were. They were fruitful, and then you realize after the fact, like, oh shit, no, actually I've got the chorus for the thing I need over in this other song, and just go mine it for that. So Yeah, I just kind of sit down to work. Like I said, I have in my phone like a couple notes here and there. I'll just kind of jot something down, but it's nothing. It's just they're quotes from things I read, or they're just like a little snippet of an idea. But I tend to just sit down and whatever the music, I tend to always write music first, and then whatever kind of tone that sets, I'll just kind of work off of that. It kind of tells me, the music kind of tells me what the song wants to be about.
Yeah, for me, I have to have an idea of melody and phrasing when I'm working on the music. So, there won't be finished lyrics until much, much later, but I have to have an idea for what the melody and phrasing are going to be. And that all does inform what the theme ends up being too. Like we were saying earlier, like the more successful songs I've had have always been like, I'm standing out of the way. I'm just letting the song tell me where it wants to go. I'm letting the song tell me what it wants to say. And of course, that's something I wanted to say anyway, because, you know, like I just couldn't let myself say it, I guess, until I had this vehicle for it.
Sure.
That yeah, my subconscious, it's like your subconscious like knows everything. It's like the answer is up here. The answer is there. It's like, why can't I just bring that to the forefront and be present with with my subconscious to solve the riddle of this thing, you know? Like,
well, sometimes you have to sit a long time. I mean, sometimes, you know, seriously, it's like, yeah. I mean, sometimes, you know, it's like it's all up there somewhere, but you have to sit and let it kind of arrive. And sometimes that takes a lot longer than our impatient kind of brains would like it to. I'd like to think that the older I've gotten, the more kind I am with myself about recognizing that I'm not just going to sit down and, you know, write Pale Blue Eyes, like just whenever I sit down and write something. It's like, you know, you're going to have to kind of slog through a lot of shit. You're going to have to kind of be present in your studio and in your creative space and allow songs to arrive. They're certainly yours, you know, you've written them. But as I said earlier, I think sometimes the songs I'm the most proud of that tend to kind of come out of the ether rather quickly, you know, feel like I didn't write them because I'd been sitting waiting for them to arrive for quite a while.
Sometimes I think like I'm sort of doing it a disservice by trying to understand it too much, because the mystery of the journey itself is that's part of the reward.
Well, yeah. And songwriting were truly a formula. I'm not saying this it's not a dig on Rivers at all, but you know, if songwriting was truly a formula, you know, you and I, like every record we would have made would have been the best record we've ever made. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I mean, if it was a matter of just plugging in, plugging in the appropriate words and chords based on what sounded best, there would be no mystery in it. And that to me is so much of the appeal of being a songwriter is after what, 22 years of making records, I still sit in this room and just wonder what's going to happen. You know, it's something I never tire of. I can't imagine getting to a place in my life where this wasn't super thrilling, because there's times when I've been doing a lot of these shows on YouTube and over the past couple of months, and I've been playing a lot of my catalog and like the, you know, Death Cab stuff, Pulse Service solo stuff. And I'll play through a bunch of older tunes and just think like, wow, I haven't played that song in a while. I'm really proud of it. I wonder why I haven't played it in a while. Or I wonder why I should write something like that again. And whenever I sit down to try to write something like that again, it never works. It's not as easy. It's not as simple as just sitting down and trying to, you know, write a record like Transatlanticism or something like that. It's like these records that have become our calling cards are these moments in time that, you know, sadly for I guess everybody involved, can't be easily recreated. And I think I don't know if you feel this way, but certainly as a band and as a songwriter that has had a career as long as we have, I mean, you guys have been around even, you know, a couple years longer than we have, I think, too. I mean, you guys were making records in the mid-90s, I think, if I recall. Like, your record first time, 96? Is that your first record?
Yeah, 90, 95. I think was our, I don't know. Yeah. 96, 95.
Yeah. So it's like, after so many years of doing it, it's just still such a thrilling kind of thing to try to sit in a room with nothing. And when you leave, you have something.
When you're starting out, I think a lot of it comes from calamity in your life. You know, like here's this turmoil. Here's this calamity. I'm going to turn that into art, you know? And I just have to get this out because I need to turn it into, you know, this is the way I can express myself. That's the cleanest, most true sort of thing. I feel this, I connect with it. I'm just going to create it.
I think when an artist or a band is starting out, they've got nothing but runway in front of them because they haven't put anything into the world. So everything that an artist or a band does early on is brand new. You know, if you think about like a band putting out their debut album, they've put out 12 songs, let's say, into the world. 12 songs. So if you have 12 songs, it's much easier to do something new in the next 12 songs, the next 10 songs, and a little less easy in the 10 after that and the 10 after that. And I think when I was younger, I felt like a lot of people do that great art needs to come from some kind of chaos or calamity, as you say. But I think as I get older and the longer I do this, I truly believe that our creativity is within us, and it might be more difficult to tap into when you're in a room that you've kind of creatively painted yourself into a corner, you know, with, you know, the records that we've made have kind of, you know, creatively painted us into particular corners, and it becomes more difficult to kind of break out of that corner when you're known for a certain thing. And certainly when you've made records that, I'll just speak for myself, made records that I feel will be on my tombstone, you know, like made the records that are like, these are the records that people are going to talk about. So I almost find it now to be an incredibly liberating position to be like, I can make whatever I want. I can kind of pull from whatever I want. And I feel like it's important for artists to recognize that one doesn't have to be living in turmoil to create great art. I think that it just takes more work. And the people that I've known that have kind of tapped out have tapped out when it got hard. Because it's easy. It's much easier when you're 20. It's a lot harder when you're 35 for a number of reasons. And so I have some friends of mine who I'm incredibly frustrated with because they were some of my favorite songwriters, and they just decided to just stop doing it. Not because they had a job, not because, you know, there was some kind of external force that was keeping them from doing it, but it just got hard and they didn't want to do the work anymore. At least that seems like my kind of cynical take on it. And because it just gets harder and harder. It doesn't get easier.
You know, for me now, like there's a level of effectiveness a song has to reach for me to feel like it's successful. And that means like it has to be effective for the type of song it wants to be. I want it to like be effective for that. Like, I think this song wants to be this, and it, you know, it's not going to be done until it becomes that. And sometimes that puzzle is just like too much effort. You know, sometimes it's really draining to keep that battle going because I know that about myself and what I can do. So I want to push myself beyond that and see what's possible.
I'm still just as thrilled as I was when I wrote my first song, when I'm sitting in a room with something that I just finished and I'm proud of it. No one's heard it yet. That to me is still the greatest reward. I mean, that's like, that in a way is the thing that I feel like I'm chasing the most, is just that sense of self-satisfaction when you're sitting in your room and you just finished a tune and no one's heard it, and you're not sure if it's great or if it's even good, but you're proud of it. And the sense of accomplishment that I feel from that, my day was worth living, you know, that I accomplished something today and then I'm proud of it. You know, that I often think of that, scene in Casino, at the end of Casino. Have you seen Casino? Everybody's seen it.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, Robert De Niro is like, he's sitting in this, you know, he was living in this opulent kind of mansion in Las Vegas, and now he's in some townhouse somewhere, just sitting like in front of a computer doing, you know, doing books for gambling. And he says something like, the character says something like, yeah, but in the end, I could still pick winners, and that's that. The idea of, after the arc of this person's life, this is the thing they loved doing, and they're still doing it, and they recognize that this is what drives them. It wasn't all of the opulence and the acclaim that one gets along the way. This character got along the way. It's really just being proud of this singular thing that they do. And I very much feel that way. Like after, you know, the band's kind of slow rise through the, you know, early mid aughts, and then kind of peaking in the late aughts, and now, you know, where we are now, which is kind of somewhere in between those places. Even if we continue to just do this, I still would be in this room, or, you know, a room like it, trying to do the thing that I started doing when I was a teenager. That's still the most thrilling part of this all for me.
You got to kind of go on that journey though, to realize what you appreciate and what's really the thing. I mean, that's true on the micro level with, like, I think the song should be 2 BPM faster. And then you go through all the variations of like what the song should be until you get back to the beginning and you find out, really, no, it was probably pretty good where it was.
Right.
But
exactly.
But then you know, and you appreciate it. And there's that settledness inside yourself that you can let it be because you took that journey, even though where you end up isn't too far from where you started.
Exactly. Yeah, totally.
Well, hey, Ben, thank you so much for hanging out and chatting with me, man. I really, really appreciate it.
This is really fun. I really appreciate you asking me to do this. And it's good to see your face again.
Ben feels really grounded to me. He's got a really strong grasp on who he is and what he wants to do. And it's nice. I think that's important. You can see why he's had so much success. And, you know, it's okay if you don't feel like doing anything. It's okay if you're not constantly digging for that creative spark. It'll happen.